from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A new study just released from the California Environmental Protection Agency's Department of Toxic Substances Control points to toxins found in nail products that are labeled toxic-free, including chemicals associated with cancer and birth defects. In California, there are some 48,000 nail salons, and in this Forum segment, we want to discuss these new findings and discover what they mean. And Jane Houlihan is joining us. She's Senior Vice President for Research with the Environmental Working Group, and she's with us from Washington, D.C., and good morning.
Good morning.
Well, these results are pretty disturbing. I mean, essentially, they're saying that the cosmetic industry is lying in terms of what they put on the labels. And what poisons are they lying about, Jane Houlihan?
The study is a big concern. It shows that nail care products that are labeled as free of these toxic chemicals, toluene, dibutyl phthalate, formaldehyde, these are linked to cancer and birth defects and brain impacts, that products that are labeled as free of those chemicals actually contain them, sometimes in hefty amounts, up to 18%.
And immediately somebody's thinking, how can they get away with that? It's just that the laws aren't really enforced or the FDA doesn't really recall products that potentially harm human health?
FDA doesn't have the authority to recall products it thinks are harming human health, but these products are mislabeled, and FDA needs to follow up on this study, and it's a big concern for everyone who uses nail care products. It means we can't trust what's on the label.
Well, we can't trust them, but plus there's no law, and there's no way for a consumer to know, let alone someone who's having their nails done in a salon to know.
Right, and women who work in salons are at much greater risk, working 8 or more hours a day with these chemicals, breathing them all day long. And in salons, sometimes there's not even an ingredient label, and now we know that the labels, you know, we can't even trust. So, you know, when you're in a salon getting your nails done, you really need to assume that you could be exposed to these toxic chemicals. And at this point, we're recommending that women reduce their use of these products and just try to stay away from them altogether until the industry really cleans up its act.
Yeah, worker safety is also a big issue here, and I'm glad we've touched on that with headaches and respiratory problems and skin irritations from these kind of toxics. But you're really talking, aiming this at consumers, aren't you?
Well, absolutely. It's a bigger concern for workers, obviously. You know, in nail salons, the exposures are bigger. But for everyone, there are concerns. Toluene is a chemical linked to birth defects. It's used as a solvent in these products. It's found at up to 18% of the product in this study in products that were labeled free of toluene. Dibutyl phthalate is used to keep the nail polish flexible on the nail. That's a plasticizer, and it's linked to birth defects in baby boys. Formaldehyde, this study wasn't able to find formaldehyde. Their methods weren't sensitive enough, but it's used in nail care products, and it causes cancer in people. So all three of these are a big concern, and it looks like they're pretty common in nail care products.
Well, some of those who make these nail care products say that the study was limited to only 25 nail products, and therefore maybe it's not as extensive a study as in-depth a study as it ought to be. You're kind of warning about women being exposed to, that is your organization, what, 100 chemicals a day?
Right. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Our surveys show that women use an average of 12 products a day. And so by the end of a day, you've been exposed to about 167 or more chemicals every single day. And so really nail care products are just the beginning of our exposures. There's no reason to expect that this study isn't representative of a bigger problem nationally. I think the question is, what does it look like nationally? We're certainly hoping for FDA to follow up with a bigger study and for these manufacturers to be called out and to change their practices and clean up their act.
Jane Houlihan with us by phone from Washington, again, a Senior Vice President for Research for the Environmental Working Group. And we're going to bring Doug Shoon on. He's co-chair of the Nail Manufacturers Council and president of Shoon Scientific, which is an industry group that represents nail salon products. And let's get you on record here right away, Doug Shoon. You're not condoning mislabeling of products.
Good morning. Absolutely not. Responsible cosmetic manufacturers properly label their products. That's the regulation. And all of the members of the Professional Beauty Association that our council is a part of do properly label their products.
And you also have some concern about this report, though. I had mentioned that there were only 25 nail products, but you also feel maybe lack of balance in the report?
Well, it was 25 samples picked up from just actually a relatively small number of manufacturers. And the manufacturers that were mislabeling products were very small manufacturers, not mainstream. So I don't think this is at all representative of the nail industry today. In fact, what it points out is there are one or two small manufacturers that are creating some products for people to sell that's not properly labeled. I think the department should address that issue, not create concerns suggesting that nail polish is somehow toxic or dangerous. Nail polish has a very long history of safe use, and there's no reason to believe that it's dangerous to use.
But the trio of toxics that were discovered in these products, essentially we're getting a warning here that they're not safe.
Well, let's talk about that. Toluene, for instance. Toluene used to be used in nail polish about 35%. Back in 1997, I believe it was, under the auspices of the California State Attorney General, an independent study was done of nail salons in Northern and Southern California, winter and summer, over a multi-year study. This was a really expensive study, cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to do. And what they found out was basically found no increased levels of formaldehyde from use of nail polish in salons. And when they looked at toluene, they found that toluene, they were looking to see how it compared to Proposition 65, which I have to tell you, Proposition 65 is the most restrictive law in the world on toluene. And when the salons were studied, they found that 85% of the salons were below this most restrictive level at all, and only 15% hovered slightly above the level. So that was at 35% toluene. Now we're looking at some of these manufacturers that supposedly have dangerous levels of toluene, less than 1%. At under 1%, it's not even a functional ingredient, and there's certainly no risk to consumers. So I believe, or to people working in salons. So I believe that the state of California's own regulation, Prop 65, shows that these levels are absolutely safe, and I believe this is just nothing more than a bunch of fear-based rhetoric trying to scare people into thinking nail polish is safe when nail polish has a very long history of safe use.
This is Doug Shoon, co-chair of the Nail Manufacturers Council and president of Shoon Scientific, an industry group that represents nail salon products. Let's see if we can bring another voice into this. Jeffrey Wong is chief scientist of the California Department of Toxic Substances Control. Good morning, Jeffrey Wong.
Good morning to you all.
So let's find out from you, how much risk to the consumers? Is it absolutely safe, as Doug Shoon says, or as Jane Houlihan says, are we sending out warnings here that are necessary?
Well, I think it's important to remember that the purpose of this study was to, again, take a look at the labeling and the claims made on the bottles, and admittedly, this is a small sample, as the prior speaker mentioned, and to determine, what is the content of the material in there, and does it match the labeling claims? It's simply a small sample, and that was our objective. We were not there to make a determination as to whether or not any of these products are currently presenting a risk to the work environment, to the consumer. This is the first step of determining what the content was so that we could later do more in-depth analysis, if needed, to then make some prediction as to whether or not the environment or the materials are not safe.
But so at this point, you're hedging your bets in terms of coming out with a statement one way or the other on the safety?
Again, this was a study to focus on content, not on safety.
Well, Jane Houlihan, let's go back to you for a moment, because you heard what Doug Shoon had to say here, and I know that the Environmental Working Group has brought up nail polish. It's brought up nail polish removers, artificial nail products, a whole range of things, and yet what we're hearing from Doug Shoon, I think is this is pretty premature.
Well, and it's easy enough to say that an exposure from one particular product one time wouldn't put you over a limit that is, considered unsafe. But the reality is we're exposed to so many chemicals in a day, and that chemical that the state of California found in nail care products, dibutyl phthalate, linked to birth defects in baby boys, we're not just exposed to phthalates from nail care products. We're exposed to those plasticizers from so many other different kinds of consumer products, and most people have at least six different phthalates in their body at one time, and so those exposures are really adding up to cause cumulative risk over time. And what some nail product manufacturers are doing is exercising caution at this stage and just taking these hazardous chemicals out of their products. Most women don't want even a little bit of a hazardous chemical in their cosmetics.
There are, Doug Shun, I think you would agree, major loopholes in U.S. federal law that allow the cosmetics industry, which we should mention is a $50 billion industry, to at least theoretically put unlimited amounts of chemicals into personal care products with no required testing and no monitoring of health effects and inadequate labeling requirements. I mean, the states are supposed to ensure this, but from at least what we've been able to determine, this is not necessarily being monitored at all.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think every manufacturer of cosmetics is required by the FDA, who regulates cosmetics. They're required to produce safe products and to do testing to ensure their products are safe. I also have to point out that in the European Union, which people frequently point to as a model, they allow toluene to be used up to 25%. And in Canada, there's no limit at all on toluene. And toluene is not in other products. It's used pretty exclusively in nail polish. And so I don't believe the cumulative effect is an issue. And I think we're kind of glossing over the fact that no formaldehyde was found in any of these samples either. So this notion that these three ingredients are being used in nail polish is just not true at all anymore, except in a limited case.
Let me bring Jeffrey Wong back. Wait, I just want to verify what you said here. Jeffrey Wong, is that true? No formaldehyde?
Well, as we explained in the report, the nail coatings are a complex mixture of materials. So the analytical strategy that we had, which focused initially on the toluene and the dibutyl phthalates, did not allow us to go on forward and focus on formaldehyde. So at this point, the analytical strategy that we did employ was not able to accurately detect or measure formaldehyde. So we have no conclusion about presence or absence of that material.
And why is formaldehyde mentioned in the report, Jane Houlihan, from the Environmental Working Group? Because it is.
Yeah, it has been historically used in nail care products. It's certainly used in other kinds of cosmetics, like hair straighteners in particular, at really high levels. So it's been a concern for a long time in nail care products, and many manufacturers have taken it out because it is causes cancer in
people.
It's a carcinogen. So it is a big concern.
That's a concern. I want to give out the phone number here. I know there are many of you who have questions about this report and about essentially the debate about how safe these products are, and there's a whole issue about whether this should be a self-regulated industry and consumers can put their trust in the industry, or, well, even the industry is calling for regulations, as you heard from Doug Shun. But there is individual as opposed to industrial review, and there's a whole question of just the safety. And your calls are welcome. You can join us now at our toll-free number, and we welcome your calls. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Again, that's 866-733-6786, and it is toll-free. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. You can also go to our Facebook page and some web comments. Here's one that says, it's not just what women put on their nails. Makeup and sunscreen cause premature aging of the skin. Some lipsticks contain lead, which is a neurotoxin. I expect any day now we'll hear about radioactive makeup made from California kelp. The more that women use toxic cosmetics, the worse they look. And as a consequence, some of them use these toxic cosmetics all the more. And the result is a downward spiral of appearance, but also ample corporate profits. Another listener writes on the website, where are these nail care products made? And let me go to you on that, Doug Shun.
Well, as I pointed out, the manufacturers that were caught in this issue of not properly labeling their products are very small manufacturers. They're not mainstream manufacturers. So I don't believe it is all representative of the industry. If we'd looked at the industry in a larger study, we would have found that most manufacturers, if not almost all manufacturers, have moved away from these ingredients long ago. Toluene was not removed out of safety reasons. Toluene was removed because the California Air Resources Board expressed concern that toluene may contribute to ozone depletion. So manufacturers voluntarily remove the product. I just want to conclude this real quickly by saying manufacturers are made up of people, too. We're and scientists as well. I formulate products that are used on my family and my friends. So when we formulate cosmetics, we're formulating cosmetics to be as safe as they can possibly be. And I think the idea that cosmetics are somehow dangerous is being dramatically exaggerated. And words like linked to are being used to frighten the public. You and I are speaking on the phone right now, so we're linked. It doesn't mean we're married. And that's kind of what the EWG and other groups try to suggest when they use this word linked. It's a tricky way of scaring the consumer. It's not just about exposed to a hazard. Risk is also duration of exposure and level of exposure. So if we're looking at very low exposures for very short periods of time, then the risk is very, very low. And just to talk about the hazard and what could happen, I believe is disingenuous and not really addressing the issue.
Well, I think the caller who posted that question on the website was also interested in knowing if these products are made in other countries. I mean, there's been a lot of controversies. I'm sure you're well aware about Apple and Chinese workers working under very difficult conditions. And if there are toxics, where are they? Where are the factories for the most part?
Well, for the most part, factories are really all over the world. They're the ones that we're talking about today are in the United States. But when cosmetics are imported outside the United States, the FDA checks them before they come into the country. And if any country or any manufacturer is found to be a problem, they're put on an import alert and very, very difficult to get off. So the FDA is, I think, doing a very good job of watching products, cosmetic products, as they come into the country and catching products that should not be allowed and keeping them out and ensuring that they don't return.
All right. Let me bring our callers in. And Lauren, we begin with you. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment and a question. I'm currently 7 months pregnant, so I'm very aware of what I'm eating and what I'm putting on my skin, since it is our largest organ. I've heard a lot about, well, firstly, the fumes in the nail salons. I'm very concerned about the people that work in the nail salons. I think that, you know, maybe the nail polish could be safe just sort of on a every so often basis for the normal user. But for the people that work in the salons, the fumes, the nail polish removers, the nail polishes, it just seems like it wouldn't be safe. I mean, you walk in there and it's like a big cloud of fumes. So to me, that doesn't really seem that safe. But the question I have is, I've heard a lot about safer natural nail polishes. And there's a trend cropping up in Southern California right now that say these new salons are green. These nail salons have eco-friendly nail polish. They're safer for you. Are they really safer? And can I trust them?
Well, Jane Houlihan, let's defer to you here. Can you help us?
Well, we have some of those products in our database online, our cosmetics database. We have 70,000 products, and you'll find that at ewg.org/skindeep. So you can look up those ingredients. But the bottom line is that what this study shows is that we can't trust the labels, and that's a big problem. In federal law, FDA has authority over cosmetics. That's true, but they can't require companies to test their products before they're sold. They don't review product safety before those products go on the market. And even when FDA thinks there's a health problem from products, it doesn't have the authority to get those products on store shelves. So individual companies are making their own decisions about what's safe enough to sell. And this study shows some companies think it's safe to add up to 9% of a chemical linked to birth defects, dibutyl phthalate, in their nail care products, or almost 20%. Of toluene, again, you know, can impact brain function or cause birth defects. And so it's a problem that we have such huge gaps in federal law. So really, you do need to do your homework when you're getting your nails done or making any other choices about your products. What's on the label? Do I trust that label? You can't just assume that that product is safe. We don't have that assurance in federal law.
Well, let me thank the caller. And we've got a caller from the San Francisco Department of Environment. Swati, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. And I just wanted to kind of echo what Lauren was saying, that this is a workers' health issue, especially because they're exposed to a lot of these chemicals day in and day out. And in order to protect their health, San Francisco's Department of Environment, we're launching a campaign called the Healthy Salon Recognition Program next month, which would teach salons safer products and safer practices, as well as how they can better ventilate the salons, and basically to protect their health, because it is such a confusing matter, and there are so many different products and products labelings out there.
Well, it's not only ventilation. I believe it's sanitation and best practices generally, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. And, with our program, we're specifically trying to protect workers' health with the chemicals that they're exposed to.
We have 120,000 women, by the way, working in nail salons in the state of California. 4 out of 5 are Vietnamese.
Yes, and our campaign is actually multilingual, so it will be in Vietnamese as well. So we're targeting, you know, we want to make sure that everybody is able to understand our campaign and adopt the practices as well. So if salons would like more information, they can check out our website at sfenvironment.org.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Much obliged. And let me bring another caller on from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Martin joining us. Morning, Martin.
Yes, morning. This is a kind of a blanket statement in regards to how the agencies work together. If there's any integrated relationship between the EPA and the FDA and so forth and protecting various consumer products. And so when both parties are diametrically opposed, almost one says, oh, we can go to 20%, 25%, 50%. Oh, just pour it in there. There's no problem. And as well, it's down to 1%. It reminds me of the argument of whether in the Gulf there's all of the billions of tons of chemical dispersant that was poured into the Gulf. Okay, so the shrimp, they just swam away because they said, okay, hey, we've got dispersant here. Let's get out of the Gulf and go to the Pacific for a few months until the dispersant's gone. You know that didn't happen. And also, how the agencies work to provide, for instance, if the fracking and up in New York State, up in New York, there's signs all over upstate New York and Pennsylvania. Fracking, no fracking, no fracking. Well, people say, well, we got to have natural gas, we got to have oil. That's excellent, absolutely true. But when your well has been clean for 60 years and you've had no contamination and your water hasn't turned brown for 60 years, and then they start fracking, and a month later you take your water into an agency and they say,
ha-ha. Yeah, Martin, we're kind of off base here talking about fracking. We get back, though, Doug Shoon, to just the whole question of the role of the FDA in this. From what we've heard from Jane Houlihan, it's not very involved.
Well, the FDA is doing the best they can. Given more funding, I'm sure they would be happy to do a better job. But I do want to address a couple of issues. I actually work with this program, San Francisco Environment, and one of my suggestions was to include ventilation in salons. And I think that's where this particular report misses the boat. This particular report focuses only on labeling, but really the issues in salons are that to focus on better work practices, improving education, improving awareness of material safety data sheets, improving ventilation in salons. This is really where we ought to be going, not demonizing ingredients. That does no good at all. We need to teach people how to work safely and how to use the products properly in salons. And far as I said, retail-based products, the manufacturers of retail-based products use these same products themselves and on their families. They are very motivated to make sure these products are safe, and they do indeed do testing before. Even though the FDA does not require any specific testing, they do require that cosmetics be put on the market are safe for consumers. And if they are not, then the FDA can go after these people. So I believe there are plenty of regulations on board right now that are protecting the consumer. Sure, they can be improved and should be improved. And finally, I'd like to say that if you are looking to do some research, a really good site that I recommend is cosmeticsinfo.org. That's cosmetics with an S, info.org. If you really want to get some fact-based information, not something that's based on junk science or twisted or spun, you want to really find the facts from scientists, cosmeticsinfo.org is, to me, the best site that consumers can go to for proper information.
Again, Doug Shoon is co-chair of the Nail Manufacturers Council. Jeffrey Wong, I'd like to get you on record here about, I mean, you've been reluctant to talk about the toxicity and its perils with respect to this particular environmental working group research for the consumer, but what about those working in the salons? I mean, you're the chief scientist of California Department of Toxic Substances Control. Can we state safely that there is a problem with safety for those who work in the salons?
Well, again, the focus of our study was about really at the first part of the risk assessment process that the Nail representative spoke about. We're very much focused on the content that is in the Nail products. We try to make a measurement and match whether or not that laid straight with the claims that were on the outside of the bottle. Ultimately, as we work with our other state partners and other regulatory agencies and with other NGO communities and, of course, with the industry itself, later on we can integrate that with studies which make measurements of the working space and the potential exposures that the workers have. But at this point, I don't think that our study is a firm basis. It is only a starting point to make any extrapolation as to whether or not workers are at risk again, solely based upon the evidence that we have.
Well, here's a web comment. Listener says, where are the statistics? Is there a higher rate of cancer and respiratory disease in nail shop workers? This could be more telling. Agreed. Another listener, Cannoli, writes in an email, I went to a nail salon with my partner and three grandkids so they could get mani-pedi. The fumes in the salon were so strong that I couldn't stay in the salon, and I left. I know what volatile organic compounds smell like, and the air was full of them. There is no way that inhaling these levels of VOCs is safe. I looked everywhere in the salon and saw no exhaust fan anywhere. I was astounded that such a condition has even allowed us to exist. The salon was full of workers and women spending significant time in this environment. Another comment on our web says, listener writes, the elephant in the room. All cosmetics in all categories are made using complex synthesized chemicals. The information on the risks inherent in these chemicals is regulated by EPA, not FDA. Until we stop focusing on the cosmetic industry and hold the chemical industry in the U.S. accountable, this focus on cosmetics is a diversion from the real issue. Unlike cosmetics, household cleaners, laundry detergent, etc., are not even required to list the chemicals used to make them. Let's focus on the real issue, the chemical industry in the United States and its apparent freedom to do whatever they want with little accountability. Go to Burlingame next. Michael, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, just want to follow up on that email, actually. Why not a cultural change? Why are we, as a society, accepting the fact that women are putting chemicals on their bodies? Chemicals we don't know about. Maybe they're safe, maybe they're not. And I just find it ironic that Avon sponsors a breast cancer campaign, against breast cancer, yet they're advocating putting makeup and chemicals all over their bodies. So that's just my question. Why not move culturally away from putting chemicals on your body?
Well, Jeffrey Wong, I'm going to go to you again here since you're the chemist and the scientist here. In general, is your sense, maybe even just your gut tell you that most of these products are safe, or is it like the caller says, just chemicals that maybe don't belong on the body?
Well, I think that, you know, there is a regulatory infrastructure out there which attempts to ensure safety. We don't have evidence to broadly indict the industry that they are making unsafe products. I think what we're trying to do, at least in our study, is to start a dialogue with all of our stakeholders, the industry, consumers, so that we can ensure that all products are safe, or at least that the marketplace is filled with information so that consumers, whether that be the distributor, the manufacturer, or the actual consumer at the retail level, has all the information they need to afford themselves a decision that allows them to say, yes, I want to use it, or yes, I don't.
Well, we'll leave it there, and we'll continue to watch and monitor. We want to thank Jeffrey Wong, again, Chief Scientist with the California Department of Toxic Substances Control, Doug Shoon, Co-Chair of the Nail Manufacturers Council and President of Shoon Scientific, and Jane Houlihan, Senior Vice President with the Environmental Working Group.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, who believe all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.